Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all of this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. You think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers. That they probably will never, ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hey there, hill folk, and welcome back to another episode of Appalachian Intelligence. We're extremely grateful that you guys could join us again for another episode, for another week. With you is Justin and Ryan. Lance, y'all know how he is. He's like a ninja. He just comes in and out whenever. So I'm sure when he comes in, he'll make his presence known. But fortunately for y'all, you don't just have to listen to me and Ryan chop it up and banter back and forth today. Today, we have a couple really, really special guests for you hill folk. Today, we actually have a pair of hill folk historians. These guys are inditers of ancient entities. They're mixing Middle Earth and Middle Appalachia, sound theology, with a little bit of sketch, shining the light of Christ on the encroaching darkness. We've got Josh and Richie from the Sword and Staff podcast. Josh, Richie, how are you, fellas?
Oh, man, I am doing great. Richie, how are you today, man?
Listen, these intros, we can't live up to this stuff. We heard your episode you done with Ward, and he said the same thing, and I was like, we got to be ready for this.
Yeah, man, that is phenomenal. That's the greatest introduction anybody it has is. Ever given us. Thank you so much for that.
Well, that's kind of what we pride ourselves on here. I said, you know, Ryan, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that. I really do appreciate that. One of the best ways that you encourage guests to come on your podcast is do super awesome intros and make them feel really, really good about themselves. You know, off the bat,
it's that Appalachian hospitality.
It is.
That's it. Y'all come back now. You hear?
That's right. Love it.
But no, guys, we're super grateful that you guys could join us. You know, this has been something that's been in the works for a pretty good while now. And I feel like that timing is everything and everything falls into place the way that it's ordained and orchestrated to be. And I think this is happening right now for a huge reason. But before we jump in here, why don't you guys tell the hill folk out there a little bit about yourselves, how you got started into the podcast game, and just what you guys do, what you talk about.
Yeah. You want to go first or you want me to go first? Yeah. So my name is Josh Robinson, and I am a pastor. I planted a church here in the coalfields of West Virginia back in 2016, 2017. And I did that full time for 5 years. I also work now bivocationally as at the local sheriff's department. So I pastor and I do the law enforcement stuff. And about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago now, I kind of ended up down, I came across a book that really rocked my world, and it was The Unseen Realm by Dr. Michael Heiser. And, it really kind of shifted my view on things and, just my view of the world, honestly. And obviously for those who are watching, they've seen probably by now the docuseries Darkholler, And that kind of records some of the things that happened very shortly after getting hold of Dr. Michael Heiser's book. But Richie has, I don't want to tell your story, but Richie has been a paranormal investigator for 15 years. And whenever I come across Dr. Michael Heiser's book, Unseen Realm, I knew that Richie had a lot of experience kind of in that realm of things. And so, you know, Richie and I have been friends for years. Gosh, I don't even know how long we've been friends. Probably like eight,
close to 10 years.
Yeah, close to 10 years. And, you know, just to ask him, I was like, hey, you know anything about this divine council stuff and, you know, the gods of the nations and, you know, all this stuff? And he's like, oh, yeah, how much time do you got? And yeah, so
I remember that night vividly. Like I was surprised that you were even into that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it kind of led us down the rabbit hole of wanting to kind of bring these two worlds together, like me being a pastor, him being a paranormal investigator, and kind of showing that in the Christian worldview, you can actually make sense of a whole lot of this stuff. And I think that the tendency for a lot of Christians, especially in the modern day church, is to write off a lot of this stuff or to make people feel like they're crazy if they're experiencing stuff like this. And I have learned as a pastor that whenever you do that, you're likely to hurt people, to run them off, and to actually make them hate the church. And so a lot of our conversations just kind of started from there, like trying to make sense of this stuff. And it's led us down a lot of deep, deep rabbit holes. I mean, talking about, you know, alien abductions to demon possessions to the myths of the ancient Near East and the gods and all of that stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of my perspective. Richie, you can feel free to chime in and add whatever you want to that.
Yeah, I've been a paranormal researcher and investigator for 15 years. And Josh and I were kind of at odds with each other when this first started. Like we were close to being enemies, if not fully there.
Yeah.
And we were in a lot of the same group chats, debating back and forth for the longest time.
Yeah.
And then just one night,
we were frenemies.
Yeah. And then one night about 3 years ago, he just sends me a message, goes, "What do you know about divine counsel theology?" And I was like, "Listen, I'm just completely in shock right now." Like he went from, it was such a huge pendulum swing on his viewpoints with things like that. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah. And then being a pastor, you know, one of the responsibilities I have is like, I can't just make stuff up as a pastor. Like you can't do that. So, you know, it sent me really back to the Bible and really back to the history of the church to see what they had to say about a lot of stuff. And as I did that, I found out that it was there. It's always been there. And it's really only the modern church that's just kind of truncated its view of the supernatural. And so I feel like that what we're doing is re-enchanting all of life from a distinctly Christian perspective, kind of making sense of a lot of this stuff. And hey, that landed us here with you guys. So,
yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Well, listen, glad that,
Justin.
Yeah, go for it.
I know you're going to go right into it. And I have questions first.
Hey, ask your questions, brother. You're just a host of this show too.
Well, just a couple, because all that from listening to the psychedelic episode you guys did recently today, I got to hear that for the first time. When you, what was the Greek word? Pharmakeia. So they considered that like a sorcery, is what you were saying, witchcraft. But under pharmakeia, wouldn't you? You just be able to say medicine, right?
That is where our modern word for pharmaceuticals comes from. Yeah. And yeah. And I think that there's a lot of things you could probably throw under that term, honestly.
Yeah.
Especially with a lot of the drugs that are prescribed today. Yeah. So
ones that probably shouldn't be described. But then, you know, on the other side of it, there's medicine with benefits, even though it is kind of poison to your body, such as radiation for cancer, things like that.
Yep.
So, I mean, that to me, that's a debacle. But
Your mind is firing right now, ain't it?
Oh, on all cylinders. It's hard for my mouth to keep up right now. It's hard for me to process what I want to ask. Okay.
I love it.
Okay,
in the amount of time. So the Elohim met up with the other Elohim, basically.
Oh, we're going straight there.
Divine okay, counsel.
We're going quick. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Genesis 6, just kind of put it into perspective. In the Genesis 6 narrative in the Bible, basically what you have is you have a group of rogue Elohim. You know, some of the languages you see in the scriptures used for them are sons of God. Basically, that's they're angels. Yep, that's right. Basically, what they do is like Satan in the garden, they rebel against God. And they go to mankind, and very similar to the Genesis 3 story, they give mankind knowledge that they shouldn't have. It's the same thing with Satan in the garden, right? It's the same picture, giving them knowledge of this tree that they were forbidden to eat from and being like, hey, if you do this, you're going to become like God. God doesn't want you to do this. It's going to give you the knowledge of good and evil, and you'll be like him. And it's the same kind of story repeated over, you know, a little bit of a difference here and there, but it's basically the same story repeated out in Genesis chapter 6. Yeah.
I thought it was God talking to other gods, but they considered those the sons of man came down, right? And laid with the dot. No, wait. How did it?
Sons of God came down into the daughters of men.
That's the Nephilim, right?
Yeah.
The offspring of those. Okay. Yep. So they were considered Elohim.
The giants, the offspring?
No. The fallen angels.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. Yep. That's where my mix up was. Because when it was like Elohim came to these other Elohim, I'd be like, I'm Elohim too. Who are you? I'll just do what I want. How about that? But I was thinking Odin, all these other guys, you know, like, and then Jesus was just like, hey, your time's up. One God now. I'm like, what? But I mean, why else would the Bible have in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt put no other gods before me if there were no other gods?
Yeah. No,
well, there were.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. There were. Yeah. 100%. Yep.
And that's,
you're right to draw that conclusion.
I know a lot of people spin that today and like, oh, well, you're on your cell phone, not paying attention to the pastor in church on Sunday. You're putting something before God. And I understand that. But at that point in time, they didn't have cell phones and other crap. They had other gods, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. Yeah. That's an application that people draw from that text today is, you know, putting something before God. But you're right. In the ancient context of that passage, I mean, this is putting other real spiritual entities before the one true God. Like that's the context. That's what was going on. I mean, you look at Israel's neighbors and they're worshiping like the Canaanites. They're worshiping El. They're worshiping Baal. They're worshiping Ashtoreth. Those are all real beings. And then you look at Babylon and they're worshiping their own set of deities. And you look at Egypt and they're doing the same thing with Ra and, you know, Horus and Osiris, and those are real spiritual beings. And the reason why the Bible gives that command, don't have any other gods before me, is because it is totally possible to do that.
Which is, you know what, you're talking about the Eye of Horus there. It's pretty funny that our pineal glands are identical to the Eye of Horus. Do you not agree?
You mean the shape, like the way they look?
The shape of the Eye of Horus.
I've seen that, yeah.
Look at a picture of your pineal gland. It's nuts. How did the Egyptians know about... like, which brings me to my next point. Mushrooms run everything. They run the whole world, just so you guys know. And I think the forbidden fruit was mushrooms, not apples like everybody pictures. I think it was mushrooms. It's the fruit of... the fungi is the male and female appendages of mycelium, which is the actual fungus, but the budding fruit, I think, is mushrooms. I think that was the magic key.
Interesting take.
Well, I mean, just like what was it? What's the theory I love, Justin? I can't think of it right now. Stoned ape theory. You ever heard of that?
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. I've heard of it. Yeah.
I mean, come on. How fast we developed.
Yeah, it's called a creator. It's called a creator. But anyway,
I know my mind's firing on all cylinders right now.
I can't tell. Yeah. I can't tell a bit.
I can't tell a bit.
This is like the fastest 21 questions in the history of the world.
I'm sorry, Justin.
We're here for it. That's what we're here for.
I told you earlier. I was like, Josh seems like a guy I can ask questions to. Did I not say that?
And I told you, ask him. He is a guy.
That's what I'm doing. Why you keep bringing it up? I don't get it. Hey,
that's what I'm here for, man. That's what I do for a living, literally.
I told you guys, he's getting grouchy.
I laughed as I said that.
I'm playing. Okay. I'm playing. We're going to move on. Are you ready to move on?
I'm going to mute myself.
Do you have any more questions right now?
Proceed.
Okay. So now that all those questions are out of the way and we jumped into a whole lot of different things really, really, really quickly, trying to bring this thing back around. So we talked to an associate of your guys and the man behind Dark Holler, the docuseries. Hopefully a lot of the Hill folk out there have checked out Dark Holler to this point because it's an absolutely wonderful docuseries. Josh here, you'll recognize as the pastor behind all the happenings throughout that show and everything going on. And we're talking about Ward Heine. We love Ward. I know you guys love Ward. Great dude. But you guys are and have been working on for what I understand for a couple years at least now. It's something that you guys have coming out hopefully fall of next year, from what I understand. And
season one.
And you guys have dubbed it Shadow Appalachia. So why don't you you hype it up here, tell the Hill folk a little bit about Shadow Appalachia and get them as excited as I am. Hopefully a lot of them have seen and kind of know what we're talking about already, because every time you guys share something on social media, I'm trying to come right behind and share it, you know, right alongside to get people excited for it. So, but why don't you just let the folks know a little bit about Shadow Appalachia and kind of the basis behind that and what you guys are trying to show and conceive through this.
Without spoiling, of course.
Yeah, Shadow Appalachia sort of comes on off of the heels of what we were digging into with Darkholler. So all the threads that we eventually uncovered digging into Kristen's case, we're sort of expounding on now. So zooming out from her case in particular to high strangeness in Appalachia in general. So
yeah, so we really, like Richie said, it comes off of the heels of Darkholler. And you know, if you've watched Darkholler, you know that it starts to zoom out. Like, it starts with this girl and then it moves out to her family, and then it moves out to like this family encountering a known demonic being from the ancient Near East.
Like other families in the region.
And then other families in the region who've experienced similar stuff. So basically what we're doing is we're continuing to kind of follow that trail and to kind of make sense of all of the high strangeness in Appalachia. And so kind of a play on, Appalachia with the name Shadow Appalachia. This place, there's a lot of people who live in this area who knows that there is a lot of odd, strange, dark things that happen here. And so we're kind of trying to make some sense of that. Like, some of the things that people have grown up with knowing about here, there's a lot more truth to these stories than they thought that there was. And you can actually make sense of those things with kind of the perspective that we're putting out there. So that's kind of what we're doing. We have been working on it for quite a while.
I was going to say, especially with the episode 5 of Darkholler, you really begin to see
that the roots
zooming out into the region.
Yeah, the seeds are kind of laid in episode 5 of Darkholler. It starts here at the kitchen table where we're at right now. And and that's where we're at with it. And so I think that we've almost got episode 1 of it already finished. I think Wood said that we had a pretty good episode 1 already. First season, let me say this as well. So the first season, we're really drilling into Logan County, West Virginia.
And that wasn't always the case.
That wasn't
the first season. We were going to feature various concentrated places of high strangeness. So Logan, Point Pleasant, Flatwoods. All these locations in one season, but now
it's a little too ambitious.
Yeah, a little bit too ambitious. There's too many threads to go down to uncover. So we decided season one would just zoom in completely on Logan County.
We'd give a whole season to it.
Yep, and setting the sort of foundations
which,
for the rest.
Which is fascinating, because if anybody knows anything about Logan County, West Virginia, there's a lot of strangeness in Logan County, West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got, you know, one of the famous stories here is the case of Mamie Thurman, who was murdered, and then her body was dropped on 22 Mine Road. And everybody knows that if you go up there at certain times, you can encounter the ghost of Mamie Thurman. And then, you know, we've got coal mine lore, which we did a whole episode about too. Yep. And, you know, there's fairy lore that's come over from Scotland and Ireland into coal mining lore. And people experience fae in the coal mines. And then we've got
tons of cryptids
and UFO reports. We've got sightings of devil dogs here. So we're basically drilling into Logan County, and there's going to be kind of like an episode dedicated to all of these threads. And that's not even counting the Native American threads.
Yeah. We're kind of making the case that Logan County is a window area, like John Keel describes for Point Pleasant.
Yeah.
There's a lot of connections between Logan County and Point Pleasant. If you want to.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've actually read somewhere where somebody's made that connection before. I can't remember where that was. But as soon as you said that, it just dawned on me. I remember that now.
Yeah, one of the big connection points is Chief Cornstalk in Point Pleasant to put the curse on Point Pleasant.
Yeah.
Yes.
His daughter, Princess Saracoma, is buried down here in Logan.
Downtown, so, yes. Logan at the courthouse.
And that's then, right.
You know, there's another connection point too. So there was a hotel that used to reside in the center of Logan called the Aracoma Hotel. It's named after Princess Aracoma. Well, whenever they tore down that hotel, they found basically what was a burial mound underneath the hotel. And there was a child there with what is described in the archaeological findings as a Birdman gorget that was attached still yet. Now, if you know anything about the Point Pleasant Mothman case, you know that Mothman was originally called the Birdman.
Birdman. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. And see, that's the thing that I love. And I know this is going to sound, well, it's not going to sound weird for anybody listening to this show. It only sounds weird to normal people that, you know, don't listen to what we have to deliver. But that's what I love when you start diving in and digging into some of these things and some of these topics, and you start looking at the history of it. And, you know, a lot of things that you're sitting back and looking, especially with a lot of these, you know, different paranormal TV shows or some of these things, like, people are really, 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 really stretching, trying to make some of these connections. Everything that you guys said right there, you're not having to stretch. You're not, I mean, the connections are already there. Like, you're not having to make up some kind of big fabricated story or to grasp at straws. I mean, it's all there. It's all
just documenting what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look at these threads, we lay it all at the feet of these elemental spirits that the natives worship. So you can link Mothman to the Birdman, and even things like the Black Panther sightings in West Virginia. It's literally linked to a elemental spirit called the Wampus. So all of these things were linking to Native American roots.
And for me, Justin, the thing that you're saying there about not having to stretch, that's something that's very important to me, especially as being a pastor. I think in a very straightforward way, I think it's fair to say. And, you know, I'm able to see connections and to make connections because that's what I do. And so for me, a lot of this plays into just being a good local, right? Like, yeah, just being a good local and knowing the stories of the area that you're in and being able to tell that. And also to be able to understand the stories of your surrounding area and to show how there's connection points there. And so for me, that's a lot of what it is it's just being a good local, or you can call it being a good historian of your area, whatever you want to call it. But to me, that's a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to make those big stretchy connections.
Yeah.
If you know the area that you're in.
Listen, sketchy, you know, sketchy, stretchy connections.
As the generations go on, less and less kids are going in the woods. So at least with things like this, you'll be able to keep these stories alive. You know, you know, if Mothman's real or not, who cares? You're going to keep that story going. You know, I don't think that story's going to go anywhere. They got a statue of the guy in Mount Pleasant. So I think he's safe. Yeah. But, you know, like the part of I had completely forgotten about Chief Cornstalk cursing Mount Pleasant and his daughter, Eric Homan, going all the way into Logan County. I remembered that connection when you said it, but.
Yeah.
See, that's important parts of those stories.
And talking about going into the woods, I mean, these guys and what they're doing.
Stephen Kyle say don't go in the woods.
Well, that is funny. Stephen Kyle from Hollow Sky, you know, they live in Illinois, and we'll be telling stories on here and talking to those dudes about certain things. They're like, man, y'all got to stay out of the woods. Y'all don't go into the woods. I said, guys,
it's where our houses
are. We literally live in the woods.
Yeah. We can't escape the woods. That's what we do.
We have to leave the woods to go anywhere.
That's exactly what I was about to say. We're literally sitting at the foot of a mountain.
Yeah.
Up a hollow in the woods right now. So it's just can't escape it.
Yep.
Same. But no, talking about going into the woods, we here with our little crew, our little ragtag crew of dudes, we've recently found something. Well, I won't say found. We've rediscovered something kind of in the same way that you guys have recently rediscovered something that has huge ties to, to a lot of the things that you guys are talking about here. And, you know, this stuff that I'm bringing up, I don't know how much of this and how much you're willing to share on it. If at any time you don't want to share a whole lot,
we'll stop. Yeah,
can't do it. But you guys recently found something on a little excursion around your area. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's out there in the public, so we can talk about that. We rediscovered a lost serpent mound in Logan County, West Virginia. And
that's so cool.
Yeah. And so there's
that just goes to the point that he said that nobody goes in the woods anymore. I mean, the entire community had no idea that this thing was still back there. Like, it was local lore that the coal mines destroyed it at one point. So they just forgot about it. So we went back there, and sure enough,
it was still there. And the process of finding that started about a half a year ago now or so.
Yep.
You know, there was a picture of it that got put on from the local newspaper from like the 70s, got shared out. And it was a local historian who shared it out. And I asked him if he knew anything about it. And you know, come to find out, he didn't know a ton about it. You know, he's just a local historian. He's trying to preserve these stories, kind of like what we're doing here, but he's doing it in a different way than we are. And so we were immediately stunned by this discovery that there was a serpent mound in Logan County, because as people know, there's not a ton of those on this continent. Like, there's not a lot of them.
No.
There's the big one that everybody knows about in Adams County, Ohio. But so we're like, we've got to see if this thing still exists. And so we started the process. We've got some very crafty guys in our church, some big time hunters who use hardcore hunting software. You know, they can see who owns property lines. They can see, you know, zoom in on maps and look at structures and all that kind of stuff. And one of those guys found the general area that we knew it to be in. And he felt like that he was confident that he located it. Well, come to find out, it was on the backside of a mountain that's literally in the backyard of one of our other church members. And the guy was like, oh, I know that mountain like very well. Like, it's, I know like the back of my hand. I ride the trails up there all the time. So it was kind of a two-part process. Like, one guy kind of put points out to look at, and the other guy kind of did some scouting and got as close as he possibly could without actually finding it, being like, I'm pretty confident it's in this area. So we set out one day, us and a crew of guys and with Ward Heine, we rediscovered it. We literally walked up on it. And it was epic. It was mind blowing because the area that we were standing in, according to the archaeological findings done by a guy named Gary Wilkins back in 1979, in the journal article that he wrote for the Tennessee Archaeological, I can't remember if it was the Tennessee Archaeological Journal or for the Tennessee Archaeological Society. I've got it here in my files. I'd have to go back and look. But basically, he said that it dated back to at least 500 BC. So this is before Christ, 500 years, okay? And the thing
and
was,
this even predates the natives. So this is something that goes even beyond.
Well, yeah, it for sure predates Princess Aracoma.
Yeah.
Princess Aracoma lived in the area in around the era of the Protestant Reformation, which is 1500s, 1600s, 1700s in that era. And so this is significantly older than what's called the prehistoric village in downtown Logan that was there. It was mind blowing. We walked up on it and we were just taken aback by it, and just knowing that we were standing in an area that was there before Christ. And not only that, but it was an area that was dedicated to the worship of a principality. It was definitely something else.
We spent like a few weeks and a couple months looking at satellite images and going off of rumors and newspaper articles and reports. And before we knew it, we tracked it down to like what was the search area? Like about a mile,
about a mile.
Once we got back there. And by the time we realized where we were at, we were literally standing on it. Like we walked out on the spine of this serpent mound.
That's so awesome, man. That's so awesome. Yeah. And it's crazy how much, or how similar it is to our experience with these cliff rock carvings, these petroglyphs that we came across literally in our hometown. And this just happened, out of nowhere.
The guy we work with knew about it this whole time.
That's how it always is. Some random guy who always knows it, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah, and then when Justin brought it up, he was like, "Oh yeah, that's been up there forever." Like, you idiot.
Well,
we do a podcast.
Like even before that, though, he didn't start talking about that until we brought it up that this other guy. So, try to make it as short a story as possible here. I was camping at the. Don't shake your head around. I can make it short.
Okay.
So I was camping at our local campground and there was a man and a wife who, are good friends of mine and actually, big time fans of the show. They came by and it was when I was still in the process of wanting to do this little mini documentary about the Russell Fork River. So I'm talking to him about that and, about all this history that I'm coming across and all of these conflicts between the natives and the settlers and all this different stuff. And he said,
"Pleasant."
He said, "So have you seen the rock carvings that overlook the town?" I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, there's rock carvings right up above such and such that overlook the town. Have you seen those?" I said, "No, I've never even heard of that. I've lived here my entire life, never heard of it." And he was like, "Well, yeah, I've got pictures." So he pulls up pictures on his phone and shows me these things. And my mind was just blown from the get-go, blown. I said, "Dude, how did you come across these?" He said, "Well, it's leased, hunting property, private property, but I've got permission to hunt on there. It's just there. I came across it one day hunting, took some pictures of it because I thought it looked really cool. And that was that." So for a couple weeks, me and Ryan and Lance, we're talking about this and, I have these pictures and I sent them out to everybody, like right before we'd ever even went up there to it. I sent them to like every contact that we had. And I was like, what are these? What is this? Who did it? Where does it date from? And nobody could tell me anything, nothing. So finally we go up there to check this thing out. I get directions to it. Me, Ryan and Lance, my son and Ryan's son. We go up there. It was on a Sunday. Pouring the rain. It was absolutely pouring the rain that day, but we had put it off like for 2 or 3 weeks. And finally we were like, no, forget it. We ain't putting this off anymore. Let's go check this thing out. So we go up there, we drive to the spot, we hike, a pretty good little hike. And it was kind of the same thing like you guys were just talking about. By the time we got to it, it's like we were right on top of it and didn't even know it. So we get on top of the cliff, we see it, and it's just like, the experience is the feeling of being there and witnessing something that it's a mystery, just like your guys' serpent mound. We have no idea how these carvings got there, who would have done it, why they would have done it. There's actually probably more basis, historical reference along a serpent mound and why it would have been erected and constructed, you know, ritualistic things and all these different things that go along with that. With these carvings, we have no idea, no idea. But just in looking at these things and kind of tying things together, it's led us to a much bigger adventure, which the Hill folk know all about. That's what kind of started our whole treasure hunt. But with this Cliff Rock carving, when we were first trying to find out from everybody, and I'll just tell you this one because it's kind of similar. The guy that owns the property or owns the property that butts up to it, he's been asking questions about this thing for decades. Okay. I actually have a day and time to sit down and talk with this guy because I want to know everything that he knows. He's been researching this for decades. Well, he reached out to, and I'm not for sure if he said it was a Cherokee tribal leader or a Shawnee tribal leader. This information is coming all secondhand, but he was in contact with a tribal leader of one or a tribal elder of one of these tribes and asked them to come in and take a look at these petroglyphs, these Cliff Rock carvings. So the guy comes in with a younger guy with him. The landowner takes him up there, shows him the rock, you know, asks him to take a look at it and see if there's anything that he can identify from it. So the elder goes down there, asks if he can be alone. They say, yeah, you know, just do what you got to do. The elder asks to be alone, goes down there, sits on top of the carving, goes into a meditative trance-like state, is there for several minutes, stands back up, traces his finger along parts of the carving, walks back out of there and leaves, doesn't say a word. Not a word. So that's crazy. Well, I'm finding all of this out. I'm finding all of this out, and I actually message Steve from the Hollow Sky podcast because Steve has extensive knowledge of Native American history, folklore, you know, all this different stuff. He's really in it. He's also like big into these different geological forums and all this different stuff. So he puts these pictures on a geological forum that he's a part of, you know, and people are saying all these different things and have all these different theories. One person makes the comment and leaves it on there, and all it says is, "This is where the old gods meet." And dude, just hearing that gave me chills. Still does. Every time I say it, it gives me chills.
First of all, I told you guys it wouldn't be short. Second of all, hear me out. If I'm just a regular dude living my life and I just happen to be Native American and people are like, "Oh, dude, we found these rock carvings up here. Come tell us what they are." I'm not chief beats a drum over here. I'm just regular Joe living my life. I would do the same thing as a prank. I wouldn't say a word. I would do some like ritualistic symbols with my fingers that meant nothing. And I'd walk away and never say another word to anybody about it. And just leave them there because that's
just
hilarious.
Leave them with that right there to ponder the rest of their lives. Like,
that's hilarious. And now we're talking about it. And that's a good joke.
Adds to the mystery.
But no, anyway, I think those correlations and the way that things just, I don't know. It's just all crazy to me. It's all crazy.
Let me ask y'all a question. Do you know what the petroglyphs, like what they're depicting? Are you guys able to tell?
It looks like, and I'll send you guys the pictures when we get done with all this. That way you can take a little closer look at them. It looks like 10 open chambers or circular spaces that are around what looks to be running down the center like a bridge or a pathway or I don't know, a staircase, some form of something that runs down the center. And at the bottom, and I have a million theories about what it could be, but I can't pinpoint anything for sure. At the bottom of one of the cavernous spaces is a person. And then at the top, on the opposite corner, is a person. So, looking at it,
now
just,
we can make out the person figures because they're pretty, you know, you can tell.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest of it, it's, I don't know. They're circles. Wow. It looks like a bridge, maybe, but maybe it's not a bridge. Maybe it's a ladder. Maybe it's tunnels.
Yeah. It would be interesting if it was a ladder, especially if you got a person at the bottom and a person at the top. It's kind of like ascending higher. You know what I mean? Like this message of ascending. Yeah.
Well, and I thought that it may even represent, you know, like the underworld or the transition through life, you know, with a person on top.
Say like the various realms and then transitioning and bridging those realms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see it for sure.
We definitely love
to see it. I'll definitely send you the pictures. But what we are doing extensive research into and getting ready to put boots on the ground with right now and this whole Swift silver mine thing, you know, throughout all of John Swift's journals, he talks about having an upper mine and a lower mine. One of the notations that we have from extremely reliable sources talks about a natural staircase that was there at one time. So looking at this thing, it looks way, way, way older than anything John Swift would have done in 1789. But I also feel like John Swift had to find this silver mine somehow himself as well. And if he's coming over and trading with some of the native tribes and he starts seeing these little glints of silver and he realizes, holy crap, that's silver. You know, how'd you guys get that? And they're like, oh, well, it's depicted up here on this rock. And here, like, I don't know, man. There's a lot of different things.
Yeah,
Ashley just messaged me. And, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. No, Ashley messaged me. Mamma just tested positive for COVID. She has a temp of 102. So if y'all don't mind, pray for my wife's grandmother.
Will do.
We live here and take care of her. So.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah.
And once again, Justin, I just found out by messaging her back that I don't like typing on my phone when I'm on these. The letters try to attack you.
The letters try to attack you.
And just so you guys know, everything's pulsing.
Richie, I hope you're documenting.
We're taking notes.
Yeah, we're gonna bring you on and do a follow up to our episode of psychedelics.
It's disturbing. Especially the spider in the corner, if you guys keep seeing me look at, because when I look at it, it's like two different sizes each time I look at it.
Maybe that's not really a spider.
Maybe not.
Maybe you are seeing the machine out.
I'm trying to do a podcast. Get out of here, devil.
Oh gosh. Ryan, I love you. I swear.
I love you too, buddy. Oh, man.
But
I
anyway.
Had so many questions earlier. Justin, you're ranting and rambling. I forgot them all.
You'll remember them. You'll remember them. They'll come back to you. You never lose them for long.
No.
But no, I just think it's crazy that, you know, you guys, the stuff that you're working on, you know, we can relate to in the same thing. And even though it might lead us on little different routes, you know, you're still looking at the same kind of peoples that were occupying both the areas where we live. You know, you're still looking at the same folklore, the same mythology, the same, dare I say, the same old gods, since that's what this person claimed, that they were meeting up at this rock. The same old gods that were worshipped, that were, you know, looked at as the gods of the time.
I mean, you know, same mountains you and I are sitting in right now are the same ones they're sitting in.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the same land the Cherokee deemed the dark and bloody ground. It's what they called it. They wouldn't settle here. Yeah, they would just farm.
You talk about those petroglyphs overlooking a town. And it's the same way here, like in these natural high places, that's what they were. They were natural mating places between the natives and their gods. So those kind of locations are dotted all over the Appalachian Mountains.
And yeah, one of the things we got to keep in mind is, you know, whenever the Native Americans were here, these state borders didn't exist.
Yeah.
Just, right.
You know, they're these artificial lines that we have drawn in our heads and on our maps.
Yeah.
And for them, it was just one. It's just, you know, it's a place that your tribe's here, my tribe's there, but it's the same land, you know?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, it's wild, man. It's wild. Did you hear me a minute ago? I was going to say Appalachia and absolutely at the same time and said Appalachia. That's a pretty
Appalachia.
I love
that's
it.
That's like you a cool creeping name.
You need to put that on a t-shirt somewhere. Appalachia.
Appalachia, baby. We have so many t-shirt ideas. It's crazy.
Yeah, you got to add that one to the stack.
Oh man, it's really wild. You know, some of the things that we're coming across, and like I told you guys earlier, you know, I don't remember if we were recording yet or not. It's been great conversation off of recording and on recording, but you know, when you start researching some of these things, you start digging into some of these things. Sometimes there's an old saying: if you stare into the abyss long enough, eventually the abyss will stare back.
The abyss.
Yeah, I told you, right. Justin, it was always looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. Yeah.
So, you know, for me, when I go down a rabbit hole, I go hard, like really hard. I have several, you know, past paranormal experiences. You know, all the Hill folk know it for sure. Well, these guys don't know, Ryan. I can tell them.
No, I had a joke, but I decided against it because the listeners.
He cut it.
I cut it and then muted myself. So he that's what I was laughing at it.
Oh, got it. I got it. But you know, I've had a lot of these experiences, but hadn't for years and years and years and years. Well, we start up this podcast, we start talking about the weird stuff all the time. You start researching a bunch of stuff, and then all of a sudden, oh wait a minute, weird stuff starts happening again. So it's to me, I guess the question that I'm asking is, does this kind of stuff happen to you guys too? You know, are we alone in this, or
it happens all the time and with such frequency that it's just something we come to expect with this kind of work?
I have a theory, a theological explanation for why I think that works the way that it does. So
let's hear it.
Yeah. So this isn't a thought that's original to me. I didn't invent this or come up with it. It came from a professor at a college. Her name is Esther Meek, and she wrote a book on how we know things.
That's basically her take on like synchronicities.
Well, yeah, she gets into synchronicity. But the study of how we know things is called epistemology. Okay, big word. It just basically it comes from a Greek word. But it just basically means how we know things. It's the study of knowing. And basically, the conclusion that she comes to is that we begin to know things by loving them. So think about it, right? Like the way that you got to know your wife is through loving your wife, right? It's like you didn't just learn these random facts about your wife, right? And then you said you know her. No, it's this dance, right, between the two of you. It's a metaphorical dance. Like you even see that language used in the Bible. About Adam and Eve, right? It talks about like the language that it uses for them, you know, having children is Adam knew his wife, right? Yeah. We come to know things by loving them. And it's this relationship between the known and the knower. So anyway, I had a conversation with her over email about synchronicity. And it's basically what you're talking about. Whenever you start looking into odd things, the odd things start looking back at you, it seems like.
Yep.
And basically what the conversation we had was that happens because reality is person-like. Okay, so we think of reality as just this thing that we exist in, right? It's just everything we exist in. But from a Christian perspective, especially hers and also mine, reality is person-like. And the reason why it's person-like is because it's created by a personal God. And so you should expect it to be person-like. You should expect it to respond to you. And so she basically says that because reality is person-like, what it does is whenever you make contact with reality, she talks about it gives you tokens of reality, which is basically just another word for synchronicity. It lets you know, hey, I see you doing your dance there. I'm dancing back for you. I see you. And so that's kind of a theological understanding of how it all works. It's we live in a reality that's person-like because there's a God who's personal that created it. And we need to kind of get past this idea that, you know, there's nothing more to reality except existing in it. You're in a dance, whether you know it or not. Some people are blind to the fact that there's a partner on the other end dancing with them. And there are some people who are very aware of it. And the more aware you become of it, the more you start to realize there's somebody on the other one.
Yeah.
See, Justin, that doesn't mean ghosts aren't trying to dance with me. I just can't see them because I don't believe in them.
There you go.
You know, you see them because you do believe in them.
That's right.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You are 100% correct. That may be the most clear, concise thing you've said all night.
Out of sight, out of mind, right? Never happened. Yeah. That's what I do whenever Ashley says, Ryan, I heard a noise. I just, never happened, honey. Go to bed.
Never happened. Never happened. Hey, called the Ghostbusters and they solved it, man. That's how you do it right there.
Yeah. Just ignore
this guy has had more paranormal experiences surrounding.
He calls them paranormal experiences.
That he pays absolutely zero attention to and then says, I don't believe in any of this stuff. Total skeptic.
Sorry.
Hey, it's Richie. Fine. Everything needs a rhyme. Needs a rhyme.
Richie, you ever been in a fairy ring?
I have seen my fair share of them, but I've
never stepped in one. You're too scared, or
just from my background in the occult, like I used to be.
I mean, it's a real thing, Justin.
Into paganism, yeah.
Yeah, that's a real thing. If you don't enter that with pure respect and gifts,
it is a thing. Yeah,
it is a thing.
We had a reverence for the fae, and absolutely, yep.
Yeah. I'm not laughing because I don't believe it's a real. You're talking to the person that believes everything. Well, I'm laughing because you ask him a question and then following up with, "Are you too scared?" Like it's like it's a challenge.
He understood what I was saying, though. Right, Rich? Yeah. You understood what I was saying because it is a respect and reverent, you know, a thing of reverence.
Yeah, but absolutely.
I just want to know if you'd ever seen it. I've looked for him before. I've never seen any, but.
Yep. I've seen some around here and like over in the UK, like it's everywhere over there. Like you have the governments in the UK literally diverting highways around fairy rings and fairy mounds and things like that.
Yes, I've seen that. Like this one road is literally right beside of this fairy mound and this ring of these mushrooms and things. Just they drive right by it because
it's that same reverence that's instilled in those people. It was a core tenet in paganism.
Where did all of our ancestors and beliefs come from? Europe.
Well, this area, a whole lot of that Celtic tradition, Scots, Irish.
Well, as you guys can see, I'm not redheaded, but my beard is. Mm-hmm. So that's that Scotch, Irish, or Scandinavian. See, my brother did that. It was Scandinavian and Irish.
Yeah.
So you're like a drunk Viking. And
Cherokee. Because we knew berserker. We had. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, Ireland was settled by Scandinavians anyway. They were just Vikings, right? There's like 90% of them, I want to say.
So it's definitely a part of Ireland, that's for sure. I don't know if you guys listened to it. We did a whole episode on the mythology of Ireland.
Really?
Yes. And so the founding story, so Vikings definitely play a part in it. So actually,
especially in places like the outlying islands of Scotland and things like that.
So I actually have some of that in my ancestry too. So I did the ancestry DNA thing and I ended up having, it wasn't Scandinavian. It was Nordic, I think. Hold on a second. I'll pull it up here while we got a second. Let's see here.
Looking at the bloodlines.
So it's Norway. Yeah, break out the old bloodlines here and the ancestry and the all that. But it was Norway. Yeah, I've got DNA from Norway, and you know that's up in the Faroe Islands. Which, if you look on a map, the Faroe Islands is just northwest of the UK. Yes. And so what happened was they came down And they were actually called the Norse Gaels is what they were called whenever they come in. And so that's actually how you end up. So I have a lot of European blood, obviously. A lot of Scottish, Irish, English, that kind of stuff. But I have a lot of the Norse too. And the way that that happened was, is they came down, you know, into Scotland, into that area, and you end up with what's called the Norse Gaels. But actually my last name, Robinson, it's in Scotland and it's in those places, but it's actually from Norway. So the way that their names worked was, we did an episode on Norse mythology too. The way that they would name them is you would get the first name of your father, and then you would get the name, the word son or daughter at the end of it. So I've descended from some man named Robin and his sons. And so I looked it up. So it's Robin's son. So it means the son of Robin. So if you look out there, there's also Robin's daughters as well. And it's spelled D-O-T-T-I-R. So apparently there was some he had daughters too, and they were called Robin's daughters. And so that's how I ended up with the name that I had. But the myth, though, for Ireland is their founding myth is they say that they were seven invasions of Ireland in it's the Book of Invasions. But the very first founding of Ireland, they attribute to the granddaughter of Noah. So they said that, they actually said that the very first person to found that was Noah's granddaughter. So she went there to escape the flood, and her husband, Fintan, and her father, and there were 50 women. And so basically the way that the story goes is whenever the flood finally comes, they're wiped out, all except for Fintan, who turns into a salmon and just goes into the flood and survives it as one does.
That's what I would have done. That's the easiest way to survive a flood. Just turn into a fish.
Problem solved. Just makes sense.
Problem solved.
Now I can breathe underwater. What else you got?
You're never going to drown me now. So after that, interestingly enough, and this can kind of connect back into some of the stuff we were talking about at the beginning, later on, there's this group that also is present there called the Fomorians, and they're this group of water spirits, but they're giant malevolent water spirits, which obviously has a lot of parallel to the Genesis 6 story with the Nephilim, who are wiped out by what? A flood. And that's how you get the Bible's account of demons, right? They're these spirits that come from the water. And then you've got this other group after that called the Tuatha De Danann, or the Tua De Danann. And they're very much related to the sons of God. They come from heaven and they bring the people like knowledge and, you know, for this knowledge and, you know, all this stuff. And it's just fascinating.
Alchemy, magic.
If I had crazy hair and I could be that Greek guy on Ancient Aliens, I'd say aliens right now. As soon as you said they came from the sky and
departed. There you go.
That's my take on what
they are. What does that tell you guys? They came up. They say that, which one was it? Elijah went up in a flaming chariot, and there was one other.
It was Enoch.
Yeah. Well, they called those flying saucers too on Ancient Aliens. I'm like, my God, man.
Well, that's the thing. With Ancient Aliens, they're on the right track. They're just looking at it from the wrong perspective.
They really are. Stop.
Well, they're just looking at it from the wrong perspective.
Yeah.
Who is the guy? Oh, I got to go back. What they base their entire belief off of.
The Anunnaki.
I mean, Eric von Daniken,
the guy who claimed he could read.
It's von Daniken. Yeah.
The one who said he could. What was it? What did they have to transcribe? What language is that?
Enochian.
Yeah, he's the one who. So there were two scientists who dedicated 40 something years of their life to transcribing this language, and then all of a sudden this Yahoo comes along. He's like, "No, this is what it says."
Yeah. What? Well, I think it was
and they put the whole TV show.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, it's flying saucers or flaming chariots. It's all the same thing. Like it's just
a mask. That
a mask. It's a matter of time period and perception.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, look at all of these, you know, civilization creation stories, you know, whether it be, you know, certain nations or peoples or groups or whatever.
All of these.
We all have the same stories.
The creation stories are all extremely similar. Almost every single one of them, you have a flood story. I mean, in so many of them, you have a Messiah salvation kind of story that gets involved in there somewhere. I mean, you see all of these different things, and it's like, you know, we have the basis for this. We have the original source where all of this come from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, there's so many people that I feel like look at this and are on the right track. They're just taking the wrong angle and looking at it from the wrong perspective.
Yeah. It's all a matter of time and perception. I mean, you have the ancient people who expected their gods to come out of flaming chariots. Now, where do people today in modernity expect some higher force to step out of? Now they're stepping out of a flying saucer. So that's what you get manifested today.
You know, and I think that's the thing that you were talking about there, Justin, about us having the story that sets us right. I think that you're really right about that. And I think that's an important point. You know, one of the things we see that sets apart the biblical story from the other stories is that it was preserved, right?
Yeah.
That it was preserved, and that not only do we have like one or two copies of the Bible, but we have lots, like more than any other book in history. And a lot of these stories, you know, like if you look at the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is a Babylonian, you know, flood account from their perspective, or if you look at some of the other stories, we don't have, like, I've got a copy of Gilgamesh in there. I've got a copy of the Dead Sea Scrolls sitting over there on the other table. The thing about a lot of these stories is we don't actually have all of them, and they're not preserved. Like, for example, if you're reading through Gilgamesh, you'll be reading it, and it'll be like a line. It'll say something like line missing or fragment missing or something like that. And that's one thing that really sets the Bible apart from a lot of these things is it actually was preserved. We actually do have it. And as a Christian and as a pastor, my take on that is the reason why is because obviously there's a God preserving things out there, and it was his will that when that particular story in its entirety would be the one that was preserved. Doesn't mean that there's not truth in those other ones. I think that all of the cultures of the world attest to there being a global flood.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a shared sort of spiritual worldview that goes out to the nations, and you see it with the whole trope and idea of watchers or beings from the heavens bringing down knowledge. That's something that's found in every culture around the world, even the flood myth. The flood myth, the flood story is found in every culture, cultures that had no contact with each other. So,
yeah. Obviously, it's true. Like, how do all these people in the world who never met one another, never had any contact with one another, how do they have the same spiritual worldview? How do they have a shared mythology on different continents? Obviously, these stories are a shared cultural memory of events that really happened, and people were recording it from their perspective. And
absolutely.
And it just so happens that the Bible is the complete one that we have.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's not even just shared ideology and shared spiritual, spirituality. You know, it's not even the shared stories and stuff like that. It's shared archaeology. It's shared
symbolism.
You look at the way structures are built. Look at pyramids. You have pyramids popping up in so many different areas all across the world, all around the same time frame, when people should have literally had zero communication with each other.
And the symbolism behind the pyramids, I mean, they're aligned with certain celestial bodies. So with the stars, with the constellations, I mean, that is not anything that's left to chance.
Yeah.
If you guys go back and listen to any of our episodes, you'll understand that I have a bone to pick with the Spaniards. And because I believe the Aztecs and the Incans were really onto something, and these dudes, ugh.
Well, they had a lot of knowledge. I believe they had a whole lot of knowledge. The practices,
because the practices could have been all.
Yeah.
Dang it. Yeah. I mean, come on. How in the world at this point in time? Now you got to figure this is before Galileo is looking at the skies through a telescope. And these people are building pyramids like the Sun Pyramid. I think it is that what it's called? And where a certain day of the year, when the sun reaches solstice. A certain point, summer solstice,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And down the stairs, the shadow creates a snake all the way to the head of the snake that's carved.
I think it's the pyramid of Kukla Khan, I think is what it is. Yeah.
How in the world? And not only that, but directly out in front of that is one of those cenotes, the underground water supplies. And in line between those things, it's lined up with Venus.
Yep. Yeah. Well, dude, it's watcher knowledge. It's fallen angel knowledge. It's God knowledge. It's
the watchers brought this same knowledge down to all the peoples. I mean, it's a knowledge of astrology and astronomy. It's all part of it. Yeah.
One of the fascinating things about the mythologies of those people, of different peoples, is they all have this story of these cultural heroes who come to them and give to them this knowledge. Like, for example, if you go back and if you look at, Mesoamerican, mythology, there, I can't remember if it was Kukla Khan. I think it was Kukla Khan. Oh, no, it's Quetzalcoatl. He's also a feathered serpent deity like Kukla Khan. Okay. In their mythology, Quetzalcoatl comes to them after the flood, and he brings to them this knowledge of society and civilization and all that stuff. And it's the same thing with Babylon. If you go and look at Babylonian mythology, you've got the same kind of thing going on with it's the Apkallu after the flood. There are these wise sages who come and bring this pre-flood literally secret knowledge.
To sow the watcher seeds again after the flood.
Yeah. And it's, you've got to account for that somehow, you know, like how do all of these people have the same story of these sages, these culture heroes who come to them and bring them knowledge. And then all of a sudden they start popping up pyramids. They start building temples in places like, the one that's over there in Turkey, Göbekli Tepe.
Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah. Göbekli Tepe. And then, you know, it's just unbelievable. It's like you go to Babylon and they've got the big step pyramids, right? Like how do all of those people at the same time start popping up this stuff? There's got to be some kind of truth to that story. Like that they may have
seen it on Facebook. I mean, we don't know what kind of technology they had.
Maybe that's where everybody gets their news from, you know, their information.
Yeah. This is on social media.
It was just to break real up quick, a, guys. I see this on Donald TikTok. Trump. I'm gonna build it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I seen this on Watcher TikTok.
I watched this dude on YouTube with this stick out in the jungle, and he was just carving pyramids and stuff. I can't remember what he's called, but there's this dude out there who literally is just a dude in the jungle with a stick, and he carves like pools and all. It's wild. Just type it in on YouTube. I'm just like, this dude's
that's awesome.
This dude's got watcher knowledge.
This dude is a watcher.
Yeah.
This is Zazel in the flesh.
Somebody talk to this man.
It's Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah, he's escaped into the Amazon up there. Yeah,
right.
Ryan, get up with him. We got to get him on the show.
Hey, Demons, it's me, your boy. That's a joke.
No, I could. I think they got that part. I could talk about, you know, ancient history and mythology and all that stuff all day. And that's what I really, really enjoy about your all show. And, you know, I told you guys really early on, I've talked to Ryan about y'all. I love y'all's dynamic because it's a lot like our dynamic. As you can see, you know, listening to y'all's episodes, there's a lot of time that Richie's brain is firing, not for the same reason that Ryan's is right now.
but not far from it.
Not far from it.
But Richie's brain is fired and he's going off on these different ways. And Josh is always trying to reel it back in and bring it back to center. And Ryan actually said today, listening to y'all's episode, he said, dude, that's me and you. Like, literally, I'm going off on all these tangents.
Every podcast needs a Ryan and a sketchy Richie. Like,
if you
that's what happened.
If you two got a podcast together,
and we'd end up ODing scared. And dying somewhere. That's
you guys would be in a fairy circle, building a pyramid with watcher knowledge. And
you guys like beer, right? Come on, fairy.
We're coming to you live from the fairy circle right now.
Yeah. Most disrespectful thing we could do.
And if me and Josh had a podcast, it would be the most boring, historical, just information, boom, 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 boom. Maybe a joke, like once an episode, maybe.
It'd be a real dry dad joke. Real dry. Hey, here's a joke I can use on all our listeners. You guys know, and we got this from a listener, so I'm using it.
Okay.
You guys know they just found insects on the moon, right?
Really?
Yeah, they're calling them lunatics.
Oh, I bet Richie appreciates that one.
Dad joke I've ever heard in my life.
Lunatics.
The lunatics.
My favorite dad joke, Richie, is, do you know where virgin wool comes from?
Tell me.
Ugly sheep.
Ugly sheep.
It's great. Our listeners are going to love this episode.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, dude. I think when you get a few Appalachian boys together and you start talking about weird Appalachia, and then it leads to weird U.S., and then it leads to weird North America, then it leads to weird world, and then
you don't live in the weirdest place in North America, and you're not weird yourself. I mean, that's just how
exactly.
it is.
Exactly.
And listen, being honest with you guys, I was raised Pentecostal. Not Pentecostal, and I was raised Pentecostal. My wife's family's an irregular Baptist. I've been an irregular Baptist. I even thought about joining that church one time. I went back to my roots, and then just some bad situations. And here I am now just questioning everything. But so I do have knowledge of the Bible. I can't remember it most of the time, but when I want to ask a question, because that's how my stupid mind works.
But, you know,
it's
Ryan,
crazy, you know, we can all relate to the same thing being from this area. They call it the Bible Belt for a reason.
Yeah.
There's times, I won't lie to you guys, that I'm just like, oh my God. Come on, we can't be this ridiculous. Like right now, I have a specific family member that has a operable brain tumor that says God is speaking to them and saying just, now they're going to die. They're going to die from it.
Yeah.
But God's speaking to them and just saying everything's going to be okay. And I'm like, you know, maybe that's not God. Maybe that could be a pride thing, or I don't know. But why would God tell you, no, you don't need medicine, it's fine?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know, you know? Like, it's difficult to know what to do in that kind of situation. I would say this, you know, you can listen to that and you can question that and you can be skeptical of it. And, you know, and even as a pastor, I do similar things with people whenever they tell me they're hearing from God. You know? I'm like, oh, you did, you know, but
sound like?
Yeah, right.
Did it sound like your voice inside your head? Because that could have been just you.
Right. And it could have been bad pizza, you know, But at the same time, I also do kind of take some comfort in knowing that we do live in a reality that is personal, because there is a personal God, you know, and that if he does want to speak to somebody, he absolutely can. And so, you know, I just try to always be discerning with those things. You know,
there's major abuses with that. People,
there are. Yeah, there are. But, yeah, I think that's how I would approach it, you know, is like, you know, like, it's okay.
This particular family member is the type that you can't teach them anything because they already know it. They'll come at you, they'll preach to the pastor or whatever, you know.
Right.
Yeah. That kind of thing. And it's been that way my whole life. they're crazy, yeah. But I mean, they are. That's just how it is. Even when I was in church at my most in-depth in church, I was like, they're crazy. Okay. And that's just how I felt about it. But like, that's what's aggravating, you know?
Well, yeah, I think you do have, I mean, I think people can take anything, and I don't know this family member, but I think that everybody can take anything, you know, take that something and radicalize it to the point that it's at an absolute extreme that, you know, it's just totally next level. You know, I feel like people can do that with anything. You can do that with a hobby. You can do that with an idol. You can do that with whatever. And some people, you know, they just that I'm never, ever, ever going to question anybody's personal relationship with Jesus Christ ever. I'm not going to do that. But you do have people that take the religion side of it and totally radicalize it. Now, am I ever going to, I'm kind of like Josh on this one. Am I ever going to sit down and tell this person, you absolutely did not hear from God? No, I'm not. Well, because I think God can speak in a thousand different ways. But it's one of those things that I feel like we have doctors and surgeons and life-saving opportunities and things put in place here that was ordained by God and laid out to be able to help humankind. Yeah. So if...
It must be watcher knowledge, and God doesn't want her to get the surgery. All doctors are watchers.
There you go.
I said her. I didn't mean to name a gender, but there it is. Anywho.
Oh, my God.
As far as the questioning, Ryan, I'll say this, okay? As far as the questioning, I've never read anywhere in the Bible where God says, thou shalt not question me.
Yeah, I've never heard anything
if I don't
questions either.
If but I it just don't seems question like a stigma, him, you know. If I don't question, how do I draw closer?
Exactly. How do you learn?
Just how like Josh said. Just like Josh said.
You can't ask a question.
Yeah. Just like Josh said earlier. How do you get to know your wife? You share information. You exactly. ask questions. You do all these things.
Am I wrong in saying in the Bible, like, even if someone speaks in tongues, there should be another person to interpret, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Paul says that in Corinthians. Yeah.
Yeah. So there, and even, and there's something with, what was it with something being confirmed three times? I don't know. Anywho.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things, I'm like, it's just aggravating. I'm going to watch them die because they're so radical. And that brings me to the next thing, asking questions. That's why I say, you call me crazy for not believing or wanting to jump right into something, but I call you crazy for not asking for proof, you know, because somebody who can't ask questions can't learn anymore.
In
my opinion.
But I think you also, just like Josh is talking about, we have a personal reality because of a personal God. I think you have to be open to all of these. You have to be open to get the answer to these questions based on your personal
reality. Well, he and I have already spoken. And I told him, just rename me Thomas. I need to put my fingers in the holes, apparently, because sometimes I just have trouble. That's, you know, and I don't want to be that way. Sometimes I have trouble. You know, it's like this. Okay. Okay. I like to have beers. I like to take my gummies. I've never done a podcast episode, but once or twice sober. I tried to do sober October. It didn't work out real well. I made it like 11 days or something. But, you know, I will watch people go to church, leave church, and then just absolutely bash each other behind each other's back. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Jesus say there were seven things? And if you were found in accordance with one of those things, you were found in accordance with all seven things. And one of them was backbiting.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple things there. Yeah. I mean, he talks about that you know, whenever you're guilty of, you know, like he talks about like lust, for example, when he talks about anger, right? Like whenever you're guilty of lust, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And whenever you're angry with your brother, you've already murdered him in your heart. Like, so you're, you know, it's, you know, this comparison between them. And, you know,
I have trouble with that stuff too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're
like,
human.
Man, how do you see some, like you take your family to a water park. I didn't want this big booty lady to come in front of me and give me these thoughts. Be gone demons. But is it too late?
Listen, man, it's never too late. And,
well, I mean, have you already sinned because of that?
like one of the things that we see, you know, is that we want to try to rope in our passions. You know what I mean? Like not let them get the best of this. Because the reality is if you give in to those things, then they can eventually lead to bigger things on down the road. Just think about it this way, right? Think about hunger, right? Think about what happens whenever you live a diet on fast food, right? You start craving that, right? That's a passion. It's a hunger. It's passion. And the more that you start to crave that and the more that you give into that, there's consequences because of that, right? You gain weight. Not only do you gain weight, but it also leads to health problems and those kinds of things. It's kind of the same thing, but at a micro level with those passions. But I also want to say this because you mentioned yourself as being like Thomas in some ways. You know, Christ loves Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, Christ loves Thomas. And Christ shows his love for Thomas in letting him feel the wounds in his side. He knows that Thomas is a doubter, and yet God has grace on doubters. So
that's what I keep saying. He made me too. He knew what he was getting into. You know what I mean? He knew what he was doing. Yeah. There's got to be some better purpose that I'm supposed to be doing. I know that. I got to find it, but maybe this is it. I don't know. I'm sure not promoting drugs on here is good, but yeah. As I say, not as I do, kids.
You know, one of the things that I have found is, and I've seen this in my own life and I've seen it in the life of others, usually God really loves to use the people who have been through dark things or has been through just crazy things in their life. Because guess what, man? There's a lot of people out there who are secretly struggling with the same things that you're struggling with.
Well, not just that, but I believe that forever that it takes somebody like me to reach somebody like me. I can't, like somebody like me, you know, if somebody, not dogging these people, kudos to them for living a great pure Christian life to the best of their ability since they were little bitty, you know. They've always been in the church, kind of like my old pastor, their daughter, just one of the, and I know she's not perfect, but she has lived the best life she possibly could for Christ. And I know that personally because I've watched her grow up. I'm much older than her, but I have watched this girl live her life a certain way. That type of person is less likely to reach somebody like me because we don't speak the same language.
Right.
Yes, we both speak English, but we don't speak the same language. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. God called a murderer Paul. He's Saul of Tarsus. I mean, in our minds, what's worse than murder? Not much. You know, and God calls a man who used to persecute his people to come and to reach his people. Like, nobody is ever too far gone. Like, the cross is that big. Well,
it's the book of John. Jesus said, there's nothing you can do to separate yourself from the love of God.
It's John 10.
Yeah.
And, you know, it talks about as far as the, you know, this is in the Psalms, as far as the east is from the west, you know, that's how far God casts our sins. Like the east and the west never touch.
Yeah.
You know, that's how big God's love is for people. And that goes for the doubting Thomases as well, you know? And so there's nobody's ever too far gone. Nobody's gone for asking questions. I mean, that's what I do for a living. And I tell people at our church all the time, like as soon as service ends, I say, listen, if you heard anything in today's sermon that you have a question about or a concern about, or maybe you just want to stay and just ask questions in general, feel free to stick around. I'm going to be around. There's other people going to be around. And we'll literally sit there for 1 hour, sometimes 2 hours, and just answer any kind of questions that people may have. And it's because questions are serious. And that's, again, that's grounded in the whole reality conversation that we had earlier. It's this dance. And you don't learn how to dance by not engaging with the other partner. You learn by doing. Think about how you change a tire. How did you learn how to change a tire? You learn by doing it.
Yeah.
Yep. You learn getting your hands dirty. So questions are good.
I told you, I told you I could do this, Justin.
Look, I never doubted
one curse word.
I never doubted you, Ryan. I never doubted you. I had full faith the whole time.
Awesome.
Sometimes when I give these, sometimes when I give these reminders, it's not because I have doubt. It's just because
it's not because it's eating away at your mind.
I have my own. I have my
bombs later.
I have my own personal issues with needing to be in control. Okay. Since we're getting really therapeutic here and we're turning this into an absolutely vulnerable, like,
this is how every conversation goes with a guest.
Yep.
It really does kind of.
So here's a question I've had for a really long time, Josh. I've asked this to Justin too. So it says, you know, the love you have for your children, how much more does God love you?
Right.
How much more so? But I've asked Justin, I said, no matter what my kids ever did, I couldn't let them go to hell if I had heaven. Mm. Yeah. And if God loves us so much more than we love our own children, like that, you think about your own children, would you condemn your own children to hell? No way. No way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that God proves his love for us. And this is, you know, Paul in Romans, you know, God shows that he loves us by doing this, by sending Christ to die for us, right? He dies on the cross for our sins.
That's where he got us. That's where he got us.
Yeah.
He sent Jesus to die for us. He said, you think I want my own son die? Yes, I will. So you better be good. That's where he got. I've never thought.
Well,
of that,
that's
Josh.
That. I don't think it was like a hey, God.
I don't think he's just trying to get us. That's just how it processed in my mind just then. I'm not being sacrilegious. I'm just that's how things process in my mind. But yeah,
I've
never thought about that.
It bridges the gap, right? So I mean, think about it. Like, God, there's this gap between us and God, and it's been there since Adam and Eve, right? I mean, literally, God sends Adam and Eve out of the garden. There's not just a spiritual gap. There's a literal geographical space gap, you know, and God bridges the gap by sending Christ, and he takes our sins upon himself, and he gives us his righteousness whenever we believe in him, when we believe in his death, burial, and resurrection. So God has provided a way that we don't go to hell, and it's not by our good works. Like, it's not by us living a better life. It's looking to Christ who did that on our behalf.
I'm trying to figure out how that has eluded my mind for so long. It just came in so crystal clear. Jesus Christ was his own son. Perfect. The only perfect person to ever walk the earth.
Yeah.
And well, still he allowed him to go to the cross and die for our sins.
So you
because of love.
Because of love. So we wouldn't have to go to hell.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you're basically boiling down the essence of the gospel right there. I mean, that's it. God, and that offers to everybody, like everybody.
All right, guys, you know I'm going to ask it. Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. You mean the dragons?
I was expecting something a little bit more sketchier, so I'm proud of it. Dinosaurs. We can roll with the dinosaurs.
I think they existed. I don't know.
Well, that we know they existed.
That's what I mean. Where's the debate here?
We don't know that they existed, Ryan. They have never Justin, found. Don't they have never found a full dinosaur skeleton.
There's
skeleton.
A full Allosaurus skeleton.
Okay, maybe like one. Maybe like one out of the millions
it only
of dinosaurs
takes
that walk the face of this earth. They have
found
one.
If you found a Bigfoot body, guess what? Bigfoot exists.
Bigfoot exists anyway. I don't need to find a body.
I'm saying if you found a Bigfoot body, it only takes one. And there's a full Allosaurus skeleton in a private collector. He bought it, but he made it open to the public.
Dinosaurs, what modern day archaeologists and scientists and all these people that have placed together and decided to turn into this thing.
This thing called dinosaurs.
It was actually just a product of all these mythological creatures that you hear about. It's their bones. It's the bones of giants. It's the bones of Nephilim. It's the bones of dragons and Hydra and Chimera.
You're telling me the sons and daughter gave birth to dragons?
Maybe. Justin. Well, you ever watch Game of Thrones? There was a mother dragons. So boom.
There actually is a line of that in some of the ancient Near Eastern literature in the scriptures. So basically the way, and I'm not saying that this is on par with scripture, that you can take this.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's like you can't take this to the bank, I guess is what I'm saying here. But there is a tradition in that worldview that can make some sense of this. So what you have is the Nephilim, like it talks about this in Enoch. They go in, they not only did they, you know, they devour humans and that kind of thing. And they were like these bloodthirsty, malevolent beings. But it talks about they started to go into the animals and to defile them. And so that, if you've ever heard of the idea of a chimera, like this cross.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of where the thought comes from of where these kind of beings come from, is also linked in the Genesis 6 narrative as well, in the kind of Enochian literature. So there is a place for that.
Now, when you say defiling animals.
Yeah.
Are you talking
about? Oh, here we go. Yes. Sex magic.
Yeah, So there it is.
There it is. Sex magic. Yeah. Like there straight is. Kentucky. The sheep are running scared. That's.
I noticed you didn't say West Virginia right then. That's pretty good.
Well, I've about decided, Justin, that if the eastern side of our state don't start acting right, we ought to divide a line and just join West Virginia.
Oh, I'm down. I was born in West Virginia. I'm down. I'm always a West Virginian.
My daughter
heart.
Was born in West Virginia. One of my daughters.
See, we're all West Virginians at heart.
Let's just say she's the most spirited of my children. I don't know if there's a coincidence or not, but she's just like me. I can't blame it on West Virginia. It's me.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's absolutely a place for that, I think. And so the questions you ask about the defiling part. So it uses that terminology in Enoch prior to them talking about defiling the animals. It also talks about them going into human women and defiling them as well. And so, obviously, that's linked to the Genesis 6 narrative with them going into the daughters of men and producing offspring.
What are the product of that defiling the women? It's the Nephilim.
Nephilim going in and defiling the animals. It's
So the offspring.
That's right.
The defiling of the animals. Okay.
That's right. And it's this giant chimeric like creatures.
Yeah.
Well, you got to figure back then, they didn't bathe a lot. It probably all smelled the same. But as far as BO.
No.
You can imagine.
No. I can only imagine.
It's like watching Game of Thrones. I'm like, my God, take a bath. Just watch them do nasty things. And you're like, oh, imagine the smells.
Guys, this is a regular episode of Appalachian Intelligence here. I mean, it's all over the place.
Sword and Staff community is going to love this one.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope I haven't offended anyone. I apologize to Sword and Staff community if I have. That was a pretty racy joke. I wouldn't tell it in church. I can tell you that. So I apologize.
There you go.
And Hill Folk, this has been extremely tame for most of you guys. Yeah. So
you guys are like, what's happening to Ryan? You got saved.
He's had a mystical experience this episode.
I'm coming to Virginia and we're going to baptize you. So
that's right.
I know what happened last time you baptized somebody, Josh. You ain't getting in the river with me, buddy.
In the river with me, buddy. Weird things happen. Whatever I step in the
river. Full on exorcism in the river out there. You got to watch him.
There'll be a whole new docuseries with Ryan right in the middle of it.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say earlier when he's talking about he read the book by Michael Heiser and then some things came out. I was like, yeah, demons. Demons happen, people. Don't read that book. He even found demons after he read that book.
I could see the whole storyline of the docuseries now. Ryan just sitting there in a room saying, look, I didn't believe in anything, really. And then all of a sudden, demons just started flying out of me. I started acting like this. I don't know what happened. I didn't want gummies or shrooms anymore, ever again. It was weird.
Stay away from me, Josh.
Oh, man. This has been great. This has been a great conversation. I'm sure I don't want to keep you guys all night long. Sometimes we get a little carried away.
Yeah.
And conversations go all over the place. And, you know, you can go look at some of our numbers. We got a couple 2 hours plus. But that's just what we enjoy. That's what we enjoy here.
Dude, that's us too. The majority of our episodes push 2 hours a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to look at each other like, we got to cut this off or nobody's going to listen to this. Nobody's going to listen to us rant for like 3 hours.
Yeah. But they will. You know, but
they will.
Absolutely, they will. Absolutely. Because people are, I don't want to say starving for, I don't want to make it sound like there's a populace out there that absolutely needs what I'm doing. But people are super interested in hearing truth. And when you can bring the perspective that we're bringing, even if we go, you know, even if we're talking about some of the crazy out there, just letting people know that there is an original source that you can go look and, you know, find these things. I've said on here 1,000 times, the Bible is the most supernatural book that I've ever read in my entire life and probably ever will. I mean, you look at the you know, just everything. You look at salvation as a whole. You look at the triune God. You look at the Holy Trinity. You look at the death, cross, and resurrection. I mean, that's as supernatural as it gets. And it's the gospel. It's the basis of everything. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. When you're talking about these, you know, these cryptids that could be out here, or this spiritual realm that's on the other side of the veil, or these entities that operate and the, you know, you can read about it. I mean, Paul talks about, we don't battle flesh and blood. We battle against the principalities and powers and rulers of this dark place in this cosmic world. I mean, that's the things we're battling against. It's there. It's out there. And for people to, I think people want to know that it's not just ancient aliens. It's not just, you know, somebody doing these investigations and, oh, well, this is just a person that, you know, was evil in life and died and they're still here and they're still evil and they're still doing the same things. Like, there's more to it. There's more to it. And when you look and you dig deep and you know that there's a God that loves you, that there is a Jesus that has dominion over all, that he's the king, he's the Lord. And all of these other things that are going on that might mess with you or might do these things, that name holds power and all of it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's important for people to know, for people to hear, for people. And I think people are, they want that, you know, whether they know it or not, people have this, you know, you hear it in church all the time. Josh, I'm sure that you've said it in a sermon a month, at least. People have this God-sized hole in their heart. And that's the only way that you can feel it is with God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think what we're doing is, you know, apart from the conversation, apart from the jokes and the laugh, the good time, which we do love to have. I mean, this has been a great conversation. I've had a blast.
Yep.
I think it's important for people to know and to hear, you know, no matter how wild and crazy it may get on here, that Christ is in control. Christ has dominion over all. All these principalities that have controlled this and done this and been worshipped at this time, they're all squashed under the foot of Jesus.
That's right. Yep.
I think it's important what you guys are doing with Shadow Appalachia to show that from that perspective. I think it's important what you guys are doing with your podcast to make people aware of that. And again, your guys' audience is probably a lot different than our audience. But when you combine, when you build this tribe like we're doing, and you're putting all these different perspectives out there with one singular centered truth, that's just, it's, I don't know, it's awesome to me. It's awesome.
Yep. Yep. Well, I agree. And probably a good place to bring this, to land this plane. And I just affirm everything that you said there, especially the message that Christ is King and that he is Lord. And ultimately, I mean, that's my hope for everything that we're producing here, that, and that they can come away with a comprehensive understanding of what it means that Jesus is King, and what that means for the world that you live in, and what that means for the powers of darkness that are out there. You know, Paul says in Colossians, you know, 2:14-15, that Christ, through, you know, through being pierced for our transgressions and all of that stuff, that he also disarmed the rulers and the principalities, and that he put them to open shame, triumphing over them in him. And so, you know, no matter how dark the world gets, no matter how dark things may get in your own life, there is a King of Light that you can look to and order your life according to. And like you said, his name has power, so much so that the early church in the first century, whenever they were writing, actually said that during that time, the gods, the old gods, just so happened to stop talking. And the reason why is that's the world after Christ. Now, obviously, we're kind of entering into a resurgence of paganism out there in the world. And, you know, the old gods are starting to come back and they're starting to talk again. But the reality is this, Christ is King and he is Lord. That's what it means that he is Lord. And whenever that message is proclaimed, that message has power. And in the same way that he has put his enemies under his feet in the past, he will and can continue to do the same thing in the present and on into the future as well, until earth becomes a reflection of heaven. So,
yeah, man, I'm clipping that. That's the soundbite.
That's the soundbite right there.
There you go.
No, I love it, guys. I appreciate it big time. Appreciate you guys being on here. We're really, really looking forward to what you guys are working on.
I had a blast, guys. Honestly,
we did too.
We did too.
I had a blast.
Good.
Well, and we're going to have to do this again sometime.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
This was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There needs to be follow up. There's more questions. I'm just holding back until we hit stop record.
Well, I feel like we really only talked about a portion of what I would really like to talk about. Like, I have all these questions and all these things and topics coming into this that I wanted to talk about. And so I think we definitely need to do, we need to do this more often. And also something that I would like to start doing. Well, I can talk to you guys about that when we get done recording.
Yeah.
But before we jump off here, Josh, Richie, again, appreciate you guys so much. Let the Hill folk know everywhere they can find you, how they can support you, how they can flock to you, and how they can help you build Sword and Staff and Shadow Appalachia.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for having us on. We really do appreciate it. And so you can keep up with Richie and I and the work that we're doing. Probably the best place to follow us is on Instagram. We're probably more active on, we are by far more active on there than we are anywhere else. And you can find us at Sword and Staff Order. We're also on Facebook too, www.facebook.com/Sword and Staff Order. We're not as active on Facebook. The algorithm just does not treat us well on Facebook in comparison to Instagram. We're really active on Instagram. Also, we do have an active community on Facebook. We have a group called the Order of the Sword and Staff, and there's a few hundred people or so in there, and there's conversation happening in there. So if you are on Facebook and want to connect, you just type that in. You can find us. You've got a bunch of security questions you have to answer to get in. We don't just let anybody in. I tell people this all the time. If you want in, you've got to answer the questions. There is a gatekeeper, and he will not let you in. That gatekeeper is me.
Yeah. If you really want to have some conversations and dig deep into our stuff, we have a Discord.
That's the best place. If you're really wanting conversation, we have a Discord server called the Sword and Staff Multiverse. head on over to our website at www.swordandstaff.net. Up on the top corner or down on the bottom, maybe both even, there are like little icons you can click. There's a Facebook one, there's an Instagram one, and then there's a Discord one. You can click that. It'll take you to our Discord server, and there is always crazy conversations happening in there constantly. So you can find us there. Also, if you want to support the work that we're doing, you and especially Shadow Appalachia, you can go to our swordandstaff.net website. There's a place that you can donate there. The best place, though, is Patreon, www.patreon.com/swordandstaffwarder. Gosh, we do so much stuff on Patreon. I mean, yep. We just sent out a bunch of swag boxes to our patrons. Usually, what we're planning on doing is every so often, we just take that money and we use it as an opportunity to give back. And like we just sent out a swag boxes with like t-shirts in them, copies of the Mothman Prophecies, a bunch of stickers, and we sent them out to our patrons. And we plan on doing that stuff every so often. But yeah, there's different tiers there. We on occasion do uncut editions of the Sword and Staff. We'll talk for another 30 minutes or so after it goes off, and it gives patrons some exclusive content. We drop stuff there first as well. If you want to keep up with Shadow Appalachia, there is a YouTube channel, Shadow Appalachia. You can find it. All the content's been shared across different platforms. It's on the Shadow Appalachia channel, Ward Heine's Dark Holler channel. He's posting it on there. And then
Tony's the Confessionals channel,
Tony Merkel. So we are, as of, I think that it's safe to say this, we are releasing this in conjunction with Tony Merkel's Merkel Media. And so you can find it on the Confessionals page as well. The trailer is there as well. And so, yeah, I think that about covers it. I think that's all the places that you can find us if you want to find us. And I think that's it.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Heel folk, go check these guys out. What they're doing is super important, and they need your love. They need your support. They need you to flock to them. Flock to them, run to them, drive to them, however you want to take the transportation to get to them, just do it, okay?
Or just go where they just told you to and support them.
same thing with our listeners, too. Same thing with Sword and Staff listeners. Go follow these guys too. You can find them on Instagram too. They've got a podcast, all that. You guys can feel free to throw that out there to our community too. That way that they can follow y'all as well.
Yeah, we'll link everybody up in the
We'll put it in our show release.
Yeah for sure.
Away, Justin.
Any of the Sword and Staff folks out there listening to this, you can follow Appalachian Intelligence anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Appalachian Intelligence. You can follow us on all the social medias. Again, we're probably more active on Instagram as well. I think, you know, like Josh said, the algorithms are a little nicer over there. We actually will have a Patreon set up and going in the next few days. We've held off on that as long as we possibly can. We have people asking for it now. So that should be up and going. So you can keep your eye open for that. And if you have crazy, weird stories and would like to share them with us or come on the show and be a guest to tell us your crazy, weird stories, you can send us an email at appalachianintelligence@gmail.com. We'd love to hear them. We'd love to have you guys on. We're all about, as you can see throughout this conversation, we're all about just having great conversation and building the tribe. So y'all come check us out too.
There we go.
I probably missed a lot, but that's quick and easy.
I think you got it all.
But again, Josh and Richie, thank you guys so much for coming on. We'll definitely do this again. Ryan, love you, brother.
Love you, buddy.
Heel
folk. Thank you so much for having us, guys.
Hey, absolutely.
Thank you for having us as well.
Yeah.
Our pleasure.
Heel folk. So, y'all have a name for your audience?
We just call it the Sword and Staff Multiverse.
Oh, I love it. That's good enough.
Swords
That's good
and enough. Staffers.
Swords and Staffers.
Heel folk. S&S Multiverse.
There we go.
Until next time. Until next time. We'll see y'all. We'll see y'all later.
See you then.